Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to University Drive. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy. We are living in extraordinary times. The world is confronted by relentless challenges and seismic shifts in the way that we communicate, collaborate, and how heavily we rely on technology. How is this impacting academia? How do we bridge the gaps? How do we find a way to adapt with agility? Our University Drive focus in this episode is on navigating this digital revolution to ensure that we do not lag behind in our digital literacy or participation in the global economy. Joining us for this episode is Dr. Edward Bethel. He's the Director of Open Learning at University of the Bahamas. Dr. Bethel, it's been such a long time, but we're happy to have you back with us. We are glad that you found your way back to us. Welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Lundy, and thank you for having me on the show again. I just want to say that I have heard from many of my friends, both within and outside the UB community, about how they so love to listen to University Drive, and they're learning more about what we're doing here at UB. And the program is really serving as a great conduit to communicate the best things about UB throughout the Bahamas and beyond. So job well done.
Well, thank you for that. We're happy to bring content and conversations every week. And we hope that more and more people continue to listen to us. So thank you very much for that. Let's start our discussion with a broad view. When you consider all that has happened and all that is happening, nationally and globally, the COVID pandemic, the shocks and volatility in the economic world, climate change crises, the war in Ukraine now, would you agree that one of the attributes that we really need to cultivate in our students, especially those in university, is how to adapt, how to overcome challenges and still thrive?
That's a great question, Ms. Lundy, and I think that it brings to my mind two main points. The first is, given everything that's going on in our society and in the broader society of the global community, it humbles us and reminds us that there really are some, as important as education is, there are some emergencies that we're facing. And we have to remember that people out there are not as fortunate as we are. And we have to constantly keep them in our thoughts and prayers. But the second thing is that, yes, we do have to focus on ensuring that our students, our staff, our faculty members, and our society as a whole are more adaptable to these life-changing events. And the thing is, one of the things that has come out of COVID is that we've seen that at least our university community has proven to be really adaptable, really willing to learn new things, and really willing to put their shoulders to the wheel to get on with the job at hand. When COVID first hit and the university closed the campus, there were some people who were really in quite a panic and couldn't see the way forward. But as soon as they got into the training programs, as soon as they started to try out some of the new tools that we were going to be using through to deliver our courses virtually and online, they focused on what the important tasks were, and that is ensuring that the students did not miss a beat in terms of their educational journeys. And I want to say hats off to the university as a whole, to the staff, the students, the faculty, and the administration for making this difficult transition as easy as possible for everyone. But the second thing that we learned, now that we're starting to reopen and return to face-to-face classes, our faculty and our students have realized that this virtual learning experience, this online learning experience, can bring something new and important to their educational journeys. And they don't necessarily want to go back fully to a face-to-face experience. They see that the online experience provides them with a degree of flexibility that perhaps the face-to-face classroom does not. So not only do we realize that our people can learn and can adapt, but once they do adapt and learn, they are ready and willing to take advantage of some of the affordances that technology provide. But the third thing, and I think this is what I'm most proud of our institution for, we have shown that in this virtual and online delivery of education, we can deliver, or we can continue to deliver, a quality product. A lot of other educational institutions, both at home and abroad, have been constantly toiling under the burden of this transition. Yeah, we had some difficult periods when we first were going through the online delivery, but on the whole, and I've done a lot of research on this. I have a course of online course delivery evaluation in every online course that's been delivered, and on a score of 1 to 5, students have rated the quality of the online course delivery on average at almost 4. I think that the latest average was 3.95. And the thing that I'm most proud of is the scores have actually increased over what the online course evaluations were even before COVID.
So, oh, that's really good.
Yeah, we've shown that we can deliver a quality product, whether face-to-face or online.
We're going to speak more intently about that, but I want to just ask one other question from the broad view. We're living through a deep divide where there are some who are so comfortable with technology and connecting in online spaces, and then there are many others who simply do not know how to use technology or use it effectively, right? And are dealing with the fallout from that. When is it that we should begin to expose our children to the responsible use of technology? When should we begin that journey?
Ooh, and so that's another really hot button issue, but a great question. I think it's always a very delicate balance on how we start to expose our children to not just to the and I don't want to say the positive sides of technology, but to balance how technology is used by our children and by ourselves, because let's not kid ourselves, technology will take over the lives of adults just as quickly and as easily as it will for the lives of children. What we had to do, obviously, through COVID is expose even our youngest ones to using technology to try to assist us in delivery of our educational programs. Even from kindergarten and up, we found that schools and preschools have been reaching out to using iPads and laptops to try and ensure that they can stay connected with the kids in their care. At the moment, I fear that they're sort of from the hip shooting and talking about technology, and people coming up with, someone can't have more than an hour of screen time per week, or all of these sorts of restrictions. That may be true, but we really do need to start to look into the data to see what really is so-called good tech use, what really is benign tech use, and what is harmful tech use, so that we can really figure out what works, what we have to be wary of, and what we need to avoid completely. Now, this is another sort of benefit of the past 2 years, and that is because we have had so much dependence on technology, now's the time to collect some data to see what has worked and what hasn't. And some of the things that are already starting to come out is that if we use our technology the way that we have been over the past 2 years to manage our working lives and our social lives, we do start to see a degree of tech burnout. And there are some physiological and psychological harms that result from this. So there is going to have to be some limitations on the amount of work and play that can be done via tech. But it's still early days, and I think that we do need to study it more. But particularly for our children, we have to be very careful as we move into this new environment of learning and working.
Lots and lots of angles to this whole matter of the use of technology. Now, you're the director of open learning at UB. What exactly do we mean when we say open learning, and why is that important? I'd imagine that it has direct implications on access to higher education, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So originally the department was named online learning, but we wanted to really emphasize that this department, the mission of this department is not just to bring education to more Bahamians through virtual and online learning, but we wanted to use whatever tools are available to us to open access to higher ed in particular. And we can do this through online learning or through virtual learning as we have through COVID, but we also want to explore if there are other solutions like face-to-face solutions with learning centers throughout the island or throughout the islands that may enable us to reach more students. That's a way that we want to explore as well. If we want to explore things like educational TV, that's another opportunity. If we want to explore things like free and open courses, that's another opportunity that we want to explore. And if we want to, and this is one of the big pushes that we're looking at right now, is to look at opening of access, not just in terms of providing more opportunities for people to actually link to our services, but removing other barriers. So this year, one of the things that we're looking at is trying to provide free textbooks. The other thing that we're focusing on is increasing accessibility to students with disabilities, whether they be physical, mental, or other disabilities. So when we say open learning, we really want to try and focus on removing as many barriers to learning that have traditionally prevented or limited the access of different members of our population.
Do you know if the Bahamas has a digital literacy rate? Is that something that is tracked?
So there is a digital literacy, and I don't think that that's actually what it's called. Let's say digital literacy curriculum that has been developed at the Ministry of Education. And also there are several independent schools that now have incorporated digital literacy as part of their school curriculums. There has not been a specific measurement of digital literacy to this point, but one of the things that we have done is look at degree of penetration, for example, of access to the internet or access to internet-enabled devices. And one of the things that we see when we look at digital penetration is that, in fact, in terms of internet-enabled devices, and so that's mainly handheld devices, there are more internet-enabled devices in the Bahamas than there are than there is a population. So A and B, our penetration of actual internet service is at something over 90%. So we know that the connectivity is there, But we have yet to really do a big push to measure the degree to which we are taking that connectivity and using it, not just in terms of educational literacy, but also in terms of daily living literacy. So, and by that I mean, not just so that we can use it to improve our educational access and our educational performance, but so that we can improve our connectivity, use our connectivity to improve our economic productivity. So how we can build e-commerce opportunities, how for existing businesses we can use our digital connectivity to expand our markets, etc. So that's the next step, is to come up with some tools that can measure this effectively and to start to roll out those instruments and actually measure the digital literacy and the degree of use of these products to really improve our lives.
And that information is certainly important for the context of the conversation that we're having on this episode. You're listening to University Drive. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy, and joining us for this episode is the Director of Open Learning at University of the Bahamas, Dr. Edward Bethel. We'll take our first break and be back after this.
Looking for an affordable, delectable meal that leaves you fully satisfied? Choices Restaurant in the Oaksfield campus welcomes you. Treat your palate to a mouth-watering twist on a native favorite or exotic cuisine that leaves you yearning for more. Bring friends, bring family, just come. We're waiting to make you feel right at home. Choices, open noon to 2 p.m. for lunch Monday to Thursday, and on Friday at 6:30 p.m. for dinner. To make a reservation, call 677-3201 or 558-0230.
Chapter One Bookstore is your back-to-school headquarters. We are proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center throughout the semester for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael Elson Complex. Shop with us on Monday through Friday between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. Call us at 397-2650 or email us at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. See you soon.
Welcome back to University Drive. So Dr. Bethel, we began by talking about the wider context of this digital revolution we're in and how academia has fared, and specifically the lessons that University of the Bahamas has learned. March 2020, that is a pretty pivotal date in history, one that we all will remember for a very long time. That is the date at which UB had to go full throttle into delivering its academic instruction in virtual and online spaces. How was that in terms of transitioning to that? What happened? What can you share with us?
Well, one thing I can tell you is it was many sleepless nights. And not from stress, but just because the volume of work ramped up so significantly that it meant that my office was super busy. One of the fortunate things for us is that prior to March 2020, we actually had the technology infrastructure in place to enable us to make this transition. So we had a learning management system already in place, and we're delivering courses in a fully online format even before March 2020. We had the virtual conferencing platform. We were already using Zoom for meetings and even for some classes prior to March 2020. So the technology was there, and the technology expertise among several of our faculty members was there as well. So the challenge that we faced in March 2020 was not so much one of ramping up the technological capability, but it was building the capacity of our faculty and students to be able to transition to this new delivery platform. And one of the things that I want to say up front is that I must congratulate the administration in being firm and decisive in saying from the outset that we're going to move to online straight away. And they didn't wobble in terms of saying, well, you know, we're going to move to online for 2 weeks and see how it works, or 4 weeks and then see how the situation is. No, straight up front, they said the term is going to be online. And so we didn't have to worry about, well, this is just going to be a temporary thing. We knew that we had to get everybody ready to deliver their courses fully online. So the first thing we did, and we actually even started before the nation closed down, the VP Academic Affairs sat down with many of us and said, and this was from the very beginning of March, even I think at the end of February, when they sort of saw what was going on in the world and particularly in Europe, they said, listen, this is a matter of time before this makes it across to the Bahamas. Let's start making up a plan now. Let's start developing these training programs to start to get our faculty ready. Let's start developing these student orientation packages to get our students ready. And so the planning started even before the nation closed down. One of the good things is because we have been delivering online courses for so long, we had training programs for both faculty and students already in place. And it was more a matter of scaling these up to accommodate the volume of faculty that would now be forced into the online environment. Once we did close the campus completely, again, this is another decision that I have to congratulate the administration for. The decision was taken to suspend courses for a period of, I think it was 2 weeks, that enabled us to start to deliver the training and to build out the courses in the online platform. And for the degree of, for the volume of work that we had to do in that spring 2020 term, of course there were headaches. Of course there were faculty, you know, who were almost in tears because they felt like they couldn't see how they were possibly going to manage this. I will say that we were able to manage this relatively smoothly, given the challenges that we faced. And I want to give a shout out to our tech team, because that's the one thing that none of us really knew whether it was going to work, whether what we had put in place was going to be able to sustain the level of traffic. Because really, prior to COVID, we maybe had 100 courses online, and we went from that to delivering over 1,000 online. And hats off to the IT team. There were minimal drops in service, whether for the internet bandwidth or for the actual learning management systems that we delivered our courses on. So that's sort of a very, very skeleton view of day one through day 20 of March 2020 as we transitioned to online teaching and learning. But for me, really, it was 2 weeks of training from morning till evening. The training sessions usually went well into the night, and oftentimes faculty would contact me on off hours, and this was 7 days a week. One of the things that really got me into a panic was one day, it was on a Friday night when internet dropped in my household, and I was supposed to deliver some exams on a Saturday morning, and I spent the whole of Friday night into early Saturday morning trying to call everyone I knew at my internet provider. I'm not going to mention the name because I don't want to do a a plug for that provider. I will say that, you know, by making phone calls and phone calls and phone calls, they were finally able to restore service. And then the other thing that we learned, and I think that this has probably been the most important lesson, is that as much as we get worked up about what we see as crises, if something doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. There are ways that we can adjust and be flexible and fix problems when we're in crisis situations. It's really given us the ability to focus on what are mission critical events and what are events that can be rejigged to meet new and more important crises. So yeah, the crisis management phase was a busy one, but I think it's one that really enabled us to grow as an institution.
So a steep pivot that had to happen. And of course there were some bumps and lumps along the road as the university ramped up. And there were some successes, but technology can be a really intimidating thing, right? And so how do you continue to provide support for faculty and for students and staff as well, I would imagine? How do you continue to provide support considering that you're going to continue to deliver academic instruction and some services on a technological platform?
So the other lesson that was learned here is that when we are providing or when we're going through change, a lot of the times we hear talk about having a robust change management regime in place. But one of the things that we learned is change management really means managing people's emotions through change, because there are going to be technology problems. And some of these technology problems we're not going to be able to fix. By the same token, even when there aren't technology problems, there are going to be people who, like you say, just don't see themselves as being able to pivot to those technological delivery mechanisms. I remember one story. This was about a week into the training for faculty to move to online. And one faculty member had contacted me almost in tears, and they just were saying, you know, I don't know why you're doing all this training. We cannot deliver this course in an online format. It just can't be done. And so, you know, I just paused and I let them have their say. And as I said, they were almost in tears. They really didn't know what to do. Of course, in the back of my mind, I was saying, you know, this is not really a choice. We are going to be delivering this course online, because we don't have any other ways of doing it. You know, the campus is closed. It's not like we're gonna open up the campus for you and to have a classroom with your kids in the classroom. But what I realized that was needed there was not sort of beating them over the head with the fact that this is a crisis and we have to step up to the line. It was not more training, because they actually were technologically really quite proficient. But rather, it was to reassure them, to build up their confidence. See, when people are going through this type of change, we're taking them from being experts in doing what they do well and turning them into novices again. And that can be really life-changing for some people. It gives them all of those insecure feelings that they had when they were first starting out. So one of the things that's most important, and one of the things that I think too often is neglected, is to realize that it's people's emotions that we need to manage. We need to reassure them. They can do it. You know, we're going to be here to support you. Just take baby steps. Show them how far they have even come in the short time that we had just been doing, and they had come significantly, they had improved significantly in that short time. So it's a matter of, you know, using empathy, using consideration, and being willing to adjust to meet people where they are at right at this moment. And, you know, not focusing so much on the technology, but focusing more on people first. And I think when we do that, we can navigate any kind of crisis.
That is a very interesting point that you just made. And it didn't dawn on me to even think about the emotions tied to the use of technology and how that could really impact individuals and how they engage with virtual and online spaces. Dr. Bethel, have you found that there are people who just do not learn very well in virtual and online spaces?
Absolutely. Just as there are people who don't work well in face-to-face classroom, learning online can provide significant challenges to different learners as well. And so it's, you know, if we have all learning opportunities available to us, my thing is it's best to use horses for courses. What do I mean by that? It's an old horse racing term. Back in the day when horse racing was really famous or really a big thing here in the Bahamas, you had different types of courses. You had long courses, you had short courses, you had courses that were grass, courses that were dust, and different courses did perform better on these different courses. And so one of the things that we want to emphasize is that we don't want to just promote technology as the solution. We want to promote technological tools as part of a solution that can open access and that can increase the potential of all of our learners to learn better. So it may not even be that there is an individual who doesn't learn so well online, but it may be an individual who learns this particular facet of their course better in a face-to-face environment, but they may also learn this other facet of their course in an online environment or using technological tools. So I think the key lesson that we have to take away from this is that let's make use of all the tools in the toolbox. Let's think of this as a flexible learning regime so that the best learning can take place when we use what this tool works best for and what that tool works best for. And yes, if we do have to deliver some courses online, say for example, to our Family Island students, let's try to make use of the resources that they have at their fingertips in their communities as well. So flexibility rather than rigidity and complete reliance on virtual, online, and technological tools is the motto that I think that comes out of our experiences.
Wow, so you're talking about a dynamic educational ecosystem, creating and sustaining that. Earlier in the show, you referred to some data that you were able to gather from course evaluations since COVID. Let's look at that again. Reiterate that for us again. What were you able to gather from the students' evaluations of their courses online and virtually?
So, so the tool is an evaluation tool that doesn't evaluate instructors. It rather is built to get some feedback from students as to whether the technological tools that they have used in their course have either helped or hindered their learning. And the questions are actually asked in that way. State how well this tool has hindered greatly, hindered somewhat, helped greatly, helped somewhat, et cetera, their learning. And so it looks at not just as the online learning experience overall, but specific tools that are used in that online delivery. It measures whether each of these tools has helped or hindered, and whether those tools were used at all. And as I said, one of the things that we found was even though initially there was a dip in the level of overall approval. I think March 2020 or spring 2020, I think the overall approval rate was about 3.5 out of 5, which is still high considering that the vast majority of our courses were going online for the first time. But that's gone up to, as I said before, to almost 4 for the overall approval rating. But what we really found encouraging was that the number of technology tools that were being used and that were being used effectively had increased. So at the very beginning, faculty would have been obviously using the learning management system and Zoom. And many faculty, the only additional tools they were using would be to sort of upload readings and that sort of thing to the learning management system. And then the students would download those readings and other assignments and work sort of, it was almost like a electronic delivery of a correspondence course. But as faculty and students became more familiar with the tools, they started to use other things like the discussion forum tools or the online quiz tools, or they use something like the e-learning lesson builders. And we found that more and more, as faculty started to integrate those into their courses more, the overall approval ratings rose as well. So it told us, A, faculty were becoming more proficient with the tools, and B, their delivery was improving in quality. We also have a quality measure that we use to certify our courses, and that we have found that as time progressed, more and more of these courses were scoring more highly on that measure of quality assurance that we use, as I said, to certify these courses are ready for online delivery.
Wow, this is all very exciting and interesting because what I'm hearing is an evolution in the way that education is being delivered, which is also impacting the extent to which people are able to access University of the Bahamas and its educational, its courses and its programs. And I want to talk a little bit more about accessing the university's courses and programs and academic instruction on the other side of the break when we talk about the impact of this growing use of virtual and online spaces on the movement of people or not. We'll take a break and be back after this.
Looking for an affordable, delectable meal that leaves you fully satisfied? Choices Restaurant in the Oaksfield campus welcomes you. Treat your palate to a mouth-watering twist on a native favorite or exotic cuisine that leaves you yearning for more. Bring friends, bring family, just come. We're waiting to make you feel right at home. Choices, open noon to 2 p.m. for lunch Monday to Thursday, and on Friday at 6:30 p.m. for dinner. To make a reservation, call 677-3201 or 558-0230.
Chapter One Bookstore is your back-to-school headquarters. We are proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our coffee center throughout the semester for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael Eldon Complex. Shop with us on Monday through Friday between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. Call us at 397-2650 or email us at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. See you soon.
We're back from our last break on University Drive. We are having a discussion about digital technology and the impact on learning, and looking at the lessons that University of the Bahamas has learned since the pandemic was declared in March 2020. Dr. Bethel, I know that one of the things that has happened for University of the Bahamas students is that because the university was able to pivot and offer virtual and online classes, it meant that for a lot of students, they didn't have to physically leave the island on which they resided in order to continue their courses and programs. And so taking a course or a program that's being offered by UB North in Grand Bahama or being offered by the university in New Providence didn't mean that one had to physically be on either of those islands, correct?
Yeah, and so this is one of the things that has always been a goal and a main push of the Open Learning Department, and that is to expand our family islands students' ability to access higher ed opportunities at University of the Bahamas. And we have delivered entire programs, and in particular the academic enhancement programs, in an online manner. But one of the things that we always struggled with is that our students would complete the academic, and academic enhancement is our new name for what used to be called our college prep program. So they would complete the prep program and get full admission to the university. And they would then realize that, they now have to travel to Nassau and find accommodations and be away from their parents and be away from their comfort zone. And many of them wound up not continuing to matriculate to a degree program, having successfully completed the online academic enhancement prerequisites. One of the lessons we have learned coming out of COVID is that we do have the capability to now start to offer full programs in an online environment to meet the needs of these students who can't, and it's not necessarily that they don't want to, but they just literally can't afford to move to Nassau to pursue higher ed. So we're excited, and they are excited about the opportunities that delivering these online courses have opened up for them. One of the things that we are really encouraged by is that even though we are returning to face-to-face, there is a critical mass of courses coming out of all different departments that have been earmarked for continued online delivery. Moreover, we have found that both our students who are Family Island based, and in fact, many of our students who are Nassau based, but who maybe are working or have relatives to take care of, and therefore can't afford the scheduling challenges of coming to on-campus courses, they want to continue to pursue their studies at least partially online, doing at least some of their degree online. And now we see that we have the capability to do this. We want to move full steam ahead in developing online pathways, or at least flexible pathways, to earn university qualifications, taking advantage of online delivery systems.
So in the same way that the evolution in UB in terms of the use of technology in course delivery and program delivery has impacted students throughout the Bahamas, it means then that there's also the potential for higher enrollment from students throughout the Caribbean, throughout the region, throughout the world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we have to really think carefully about how we can do this, because there are significant markets that we can tap into. One of the markets I think that we haven't really looked at we have been looking at it for some time, but haven't really been able to crack up until now, is the North American market. And I specifically want to talk about that because I think given our financial or our fee structure at University of the Bahamas, we can offer a really competitive, high quality product to what's being offered at universities in the US. our fees are significantly lower, but the quality of education is just as high. And you only have to look at where our students go to graduate schools, or where our students who transfer go to continue their undergraduate, to know that UB is producing a quality academic product, and we should be able to sell this to our North American market. And so the thing is, now that we are a real, and I shouldn't really be saying this because it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, but now that we're really a player in the online market, we really do need to look at how we can try to capture more of that market and expand into the Caribbean and beyond as well. You know, we have had inquiries literally from all around the world to some of our different courses. And by becoming a part of more international consortiums and international organizations, this may allow us to open up opportunities to markets, not just in our region, but markets around the world.
Got it. I want to pick up a point that you made a couple of minutes ago, and it relates to how we can leverage technology to create types of higher education qualifications, different types. Tell us more about that. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So this is something that's happening around the world. It's increasing in popularity. One of the things that we found that industry and the working world is requiring is people with fairly specified skills. And so in response to that, higher ed now is looking at coming up with more competency-based qualifications that target, particularly in technological fields, that target specific skills, and are flexible enough to respond to continual change in these industries. So for example, in IT, we all know that technology evolves so quickly that in order to provide a qualification that's useful, that qualification has to be able to evolve with the evolution of the technology that it's certifying. So, one is developing competency-based qualifications that meets this need. The second, though, is trying to develop maybe more advanced degrees that take advantage of these individual smaller competency-based qualifications, stack them together so that if you have six of these competency-based qualifications, we can give you a what we call a stackable certificate or a stackable diploma that certifies you at another level of expertise in that particular area. We find also that this new and flexible approach to qualification delivery suits some markets that we haven't been able to tap into as easily. So for example, our adult learners may not be able to put aside 4 years to gain a bachelor's degree in their particular field. They may have gone into the work world straight out of high school, but they are, you know, ambitious, they are self-directed, they are motivated, but they can't take the 4 years it would take to do a full-time BA, or can't even manage to fit in a part-time enrollment with their job that would take them maybe 6 years or 7 years to complete their bachelor's degree. So what these stackable qualifications could provide us, or could provide for them, is an opportunity to bit by bit build their expertise and build their qualifications. And at the end, if they can earn maybe 10 of these certificates, then be given some larger degree that they can then use to improve their potential for promotion, their potential for salary boosts, and their life outcomes in general. So you know, we're starting to look at some of these different ways that we can use technology to advance these competency and stackable type certifications. But the other thing is that we want to use technology to expand our not-for-credit courses as well. And this would be for people who just want to learn for interest and for and to reach out to institutions and organizations who want to upgrade their workforces. Technologically enhanced learning provides many more flexible ways that we can deliver the learning to these cohorts of learners. And so I think that really the sky is the limit in expanding access through new thinking about how we can deliver our educational product.
Well, so you're talking about the evolution that is happening in order to meet the needs of our community and our citizens. And so what are the lessons that the university has learned over the last 2 years? What can you enumerate them in a nutshell? What are the lessons that the university has learned such that it can take those lessons and what it has experienced to become stronger and more relevant and to help individuals to fulfill their academic and their personal and professional development needs?
Well, the first one that I want to say is that I think the biggest lesson that we have learned is that we can do it. This was a major crisis, and I really want to say that UB has managed this crisis as well as, or even better than, similar institutions here and abroad. I think that this really was a crisis at the university for maybe 2 weeks, and we were really quick to be able to switch into a new gear and start to chug along, not in a normal fashion, but at a rate that was, as I said, comparable to anyone anywhere in the world. So it really underscored for me some of the talent, some of the leadership that we have here at the University of the Bahamas. The second thing, though, is that, as I said earlier, it made us understand that life really does go on. We're going to be faced with crises, and with the right skills and taking advantage of the right people and taking advantage of the right leadership, we can get through anything. Remember now, we went into COVID coming right off the back of Hurricane Dorian. So, COVID was only part of the crisis that we were facing. We were already, particularly for the UB North campus, we were already in sort of a crisis managed situation. So this really taught us that not only can we manage crises, but also it taught us how to look at a situation and know straight away what we need to direct our resources to and how we can manage the talent and the capacity that we have to keep moving forward at the rate that we want to. Importantly too, though, is that it focused on, as I said, putting people first. The first thing that everyone around the world wanted to do when COVID hit was, let's leverage technology. Well, the technology has always been there, and it's always going to be there, but unless you are able to bring your people along, unless you are able to build them up to let them know that they can do it, you're not going to get anywhere with or without the technology. And one of the things that I am proud of the University of the Bahamas is that while we did have many, many psychological challenges, from what I've been able to keep up with my colleagues abroad, they weren't nearly as severe as some of the challenges of faculty in institutions elsewhere. So, you know, managing as I said earlier, managing the emotions and managing the emotional challenges of your people is always paramount whenever you're going through any kind of change management system. And I think, and this is probably you know, I could go on and list lesson after lesson after lesson, but the other thing that I think that it enables us to do is to set some change management protocols in place. One of the things that these crises highlights is that where the weaknesses in your system lie, because wherever there's a weak point, when that dam starts to burst, that water is going to find it. And so it has underscored the need for us to work on ensuring that there are always processes in place so that if we do face these challenges, we have a playbook that we can revert to help us manage the crises. I think we can learn a lot from the airline industry and see how the many crises that they have faced have forced them to put these playbooks in place. And that's one of the things that we're focusing on now, actually not just talking about the lessons that we have learned, but documenting some of these lessons to create procedures, not just to manage crises, but to improve our day-to-day practices going forward in as we return to so-called the new normal.
Dr. Bethel, you've given us all comprehensive perspectives and insights to reflect on. As we prepare to wrap up this episode of University Drive, do you have any final thoughts?
I just want to say that for anyone out there who is interested in growing their knowledge, they're thinking about taking a degree or a certificate course or a diploma course, please consider UB. As we've been talking about on this program, we have so many more flexible ways that we can meet your learning needs. It's a high quality institution, it's affordable, and we're ready to support your educational journey, whatever your age, wherever you are, and whenever you want to do it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Edward Bethel, for joining us here on University Drive. You have an open invitation to return to us and come back, and we'll have another conversation that I'm sure is going to be just as compelling and interesting as this one. To our listeners, thank you so much for joining us, and we invite you to continue to stay connected to University of the Bahamas. Log on to www.ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We even have a TikTok channel, and we're also on LinkedIn and YouTube as well. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy. It's been my pleasure bringing you this episode of University Drive.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations and the Communications and Creative Arts Academic Unit at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.